Hi, everybody, and welcome to another one of my podcasts. This time I'm going to begin with my favourite of all popular singers, Peggy Lee. I actually even prefer her to Ella Fitzgerald, which is saying, as you know, a great deal. Mainly because of, I don't know, partly her versatility and partly something about the emotional pull of a voice that to me nobody else equals. Like Ella, she began as just another very good singer, and then she evolved into something quite unique. And the recording I'm going to give you today is sort of halfway through that transformation. You can hear it's Peggy, but it's not the typical Peggy Lee of her later recordings. She's still singing with Benny Goodman, though whether this is when she was still with the band or a little later, I'm not sure. Benny Goodman is featured, but it's certainly not the big band, and that is probably her husband on guitar. So, my guess is that this was made in the mid-40s, and it's a wonderful rendition of the great ballad, Where or When. If there's a better vocal performance of this, I want to hear it. Peggy Lee, then. Just becoming Peggy Lee, as it were. Well, here it is. Peggy Lee. Now, way back in Program 5, I played what I regard as the finest version of Nessun Dorma, of which I know, on record. And it was recorded at Abbey Road in London, and I believe that the record that I'm about to play was also made there. It was recorded by the great tenor Joseph Schmidt. He was born in the middle of Europe in a town that, well, was it part of Austro-Hungary, which it was at the time when he was born? Was it Romania, which it was in after World War I? Was it the Ukraine, which it now is? Whatever it is, that's where he was born in 1904. He was Jewish, but apart from speaking German, which was his first language, he spoke, of course, Yiddish, Hebrew, and then learnt Romanian, French, and English. He also studied piano as well as singing after he was used as a boy alto in the local synagogue, so they sort of knew that he could sing pretty early on. In 1929, he went to Berlin after having studied there and then having had to return to Romania to do his military service. So in 1929, back he is in Berlin, where he was asked to do a broadcast of a complete opera and play the role of Vasco da Gama in Meyerbeer's L'Africaine. And that began his career. The problem was he was only 4'11", so he never really got to perform much on stage because it wouldn't really have worked with that height. But his voice was huge and wonderful, and because he was small, probably, he had a naturally high voice, and top notes were no problem to him whatsoever. He recorded for various labels, and as I say, this included some Parlophone records made in London in 1934. Some of his biggest success was in Nazi Germany, which, considering he was Jewish, is sort of strange. But he gradually found himself working less, and he was banned from performing at all after about 1937. And he went to the United States and Belgium and other countries where he was able still to perform. When war broke out, he was caught in France when the Germans invaded. He tried to get away to Cuba, but didn't manage it, and made a dash for the Swiss border, only to be rewarded by being interned in a Swiss refugee camp. He'd never been a particularly healthy man, and he now got some sort of throat infection, and probably the strain of the rush to get to Switzerland didn't help. The result is, in any case, that he started complaining of chest pains, and yet the hospital thought he was okay and discharged him. 2 days later, however, he collapsed and died of a heart attack. He was 38 years old. Luckily for us, he made many, many records, I mean a lot of records, and as I say, with his voice he had, he could attack some of the most heroic of tenor parts. Here he is, singing one of the most demanding short arias that Verdi ever wrote, Di quella pira, from Il Trovatore, recorded, as I say, in 1934, I believe, at Abbey Road, and he really was a world-class tenor. I'm surprised that I haven't played more of him over the months I've been doing this podcast, but it's time to let you hear something else. This then is Joseph Schmidt's version of Di quella pira. Joseph Schmidt, And from that, we're going to do one of those great leaps of genre that I like being part of the programs that I put out. This is a gentleman called Al Bernard, or probably, since he was American, he pronounced it Al Bernard. He was born in 1888 and died in 1949, so he was just 60 when he died. He was born in New Orleans and started off, as many American entertainers did in those days, in blackface minstrel shows, and was one of the first people to record W.C. Handy songs, particularly St. Louis Blues. He had a mixed recording career, was never a major star. In the end, he recorded for about 9 different record labels. And he was best known for being one of the first white singers to sing with a Dixieland jazz band. One of his songs was called Shake, Rattle and Roll, which was about a dice game and nothing to do with the later rock and roll song. But he was mainly known as a singing comedian. Novelty songs, the sort of things that I've played you before by such singers as Ada Jones. However, he was also the first American singer to record the song Frankie and Johnny. So he had a really interesting career. This is a recording he made for Edison on one of the diamond discs when Edison finally realized that cylinders were going to be going out, and he designed his own way of making flat records, which again you needed an Edison machine to play. This was made around World War I sort of time, and it was an interesting lyric because it was a comedy song of what we'd all be doing in what was then the far distant future, the year 1999. Well, we're well past 1999 now, so we'll know if anything that he predicted came true. Interestingly, one of the first verses is that he predicts in 1999 they'll have a female president, which no doubt was going to be very funny at the time, but here in 2016, only 17 years late, we may actually have one. I think the idea of having a black president was probably way past their imagination. Anyway, be that as it may, this is, as usual, not the best sound quality because it's very difficult reproducing diamond discs, but I've done my best and I think you can hear what he says. This is, of course, an acoustic recording because the microphone didn't come until 1925, as I've often told you. Nevertheless, an interesting record indeed. Al Bernard singing his song all about the year 1999.
Kind of guy at prophesying what to be, he thinks that he's a bear. He'll stop you any time at all and loudly will declare, in 1999, in 1999, although the day we write in style, they look back on us and smile, in 1999, it surely will be fine. We'll have a lady president in 1999. Yes, I'll admit we're better off than back in 61, 'cause red dye and moving tickets hadn't quite begun. And I've been gazing at the stars and got things figured out. There's no one in this world but me knows what that's all about. In 1999, I reckon you know what I mean. We'll be drinking gasoline in 1999. They'll even come a time they won't write any mammy songs in 1999. I let you in on something else, but don't you tell a soul. This money that we spend today, they'll use that stuff for coal. These vampire women nowadays are wearing less and less, but they'll be wearing less and less in 99, I reckon. In 1999, but in our 20 cents, I guess, you can buy the wife a dress in 1999. It won't be any crime to have a dozen wives or so in 1999. nowadays get married just for fun. But when they try to get on, hit their troubles start by gum. They hire a liar just to swear each other's not to blame. The things they accuse each other of, it drives the judge insane. But in 1999, there'll be no jury to declare what is what, for they won't care in 1999. Divorce will take no time. They leave them flat and say that's that, 1999.
And from a somewhat forgotten recording artist, by the way, I discovered that that recording was a little later than I thought, actually, 1924. From that recording, we go to one of the greats of jazz. I've been playing a lot of big bands recently, but of course a lot of jazz is played by much smaller groups. And I haven't played a recording of one of the greats of the tenor saxophone for, some 60 or 70 programs or more. His name, of course, was Ben Webster. He was born in 1909, died in 1973, maybe defined his whole career by the few years that he spent playing with Duke Ellington at the beginning of the 1940s. But he was a classic Kansas City tenor saxophone player. When playing the up-tempo stuff, there was an edge to his tone, but he was a master of playing ballads. Some of the way he played he may have picked up from playing alongside the great Johnny Hodges, but whatever the source of his playing was, he is my favourite tenor player of all. He doesn't play with a whole lot of notes. He's not one of the most adept players technically. He didn't change the history of jazz. It's just that when you have one of his LPs on, for instance, you can't take it off the turntable. You want to play it again and again. This, of course, is a 78 of his. After leaving Duke Ellington, he made a solo career, and one of the things you did in those days was to record for a new jazz label called Savoy, the same label upon which Charlie Parker made his name. This, however, is very different from Charlie Parker. It's a beautifully played ballad called I Surrender Dear, originally recorded by Bing Crosby and written by one of the rhythm boys, Harry Barris. And here is Ben Webster's classic version of it, 1944, and it's just wonderful, as he always is. Mm-hmm. Ben Webster. Well, now, from one sort of tenor to another. Beniamino Gigli was one of the three great tenors of the last century. Forget the three tenors of more recent years. Surely the three great tenors were Enrico Caruso, Beniamino Gigli, and Jussi Björling. I only heard the last of those live, and he was wonderful. I haven't played you many tracks of Beniamino Gigli. He was born in 1890 and died in 1957. And was singing pretty much till the end when his emphysema stopped him from performing. After the age of 40, there was little loss of vocal power over the years. Indeed, towards the latter end of his career, he was able to approach some of the more dramatic roles, even Otello, I think. But his was always really a lirico spinto voice, with this ability to produce, even in old age, this sort of second voice he had, a sort of mezza voce, which he was so full of beauty that you just fell in love with it. It was almost an illusion of youth in his older age. Nevertheless, if you hear his early recordings, say up to the age of 40, there was a sort of strength and warmth and power in the voice that he never quite had again. And so I'd like to play you a recording of a Puccini aria that we don't hear that often, Donna non vidi mai, which he recorded in 1926 when he was 36 years old and probably at the height of his vocal powers. I've always loved this recording. He'd only been in the recording studio for about 5-6 years by then, and of course 1926 meant that he'd only been recording with a microphone for a couple of years. So this is the young Gigli at possibly the highest point of his vocal powers, if not his artistic powers. Beniamino Gigli then, singing Donna non vidi mai. the great Beniamino Gigli. Well, you couldn't get much further from that to what I'm going to play now, although they were around at the same time. Douglas Bing was born in 1893, just 3 years after Beniamino Gigli, but of course he never sang opera. If anything, he was nearer to soprano than a tenor because he became famous for his female impressions. He would wear full evening dress, jacket, black tie, etc., but had over it sort of hung on two hooks over his shoulders, sort of half a dress. Then he put on a wig and pretend to be a woman. In the time when being a homosexual was actually illegal, he made it pretty clear that he was gay. But of course, as long as you didn't actually do anything, that was all right. And he used his onstage personality to perform all sorts of double entendre songs, which one is surprised that he was able to get away with. He was the son of a bank manager and a schoolmistress, and they didn't exactly encourage his desire to go into the theatre. Indeed, they sent him off to live in Germany with his elder brother, who owned a lace factory there. But he studied music and studied German and went into fashion for a while. But the call of the stage was too great for him. And in 1914, he answered an ad for a seaside concert party. They wanted what they called a light comedian, and he first appeared on stage that year in Hastings. He toured the whole of England and obviously had decided that this was going to be his life's work. At first, he played juvenile leads, and he played in pantomimes, and did all the things that one did in those days. But his breakthrough was probably the chance to be in a big show written by Noel Coward and produced by C.B. Cochrane. He became very successful, was even able to open his own nightclub in central London, where he began to perform these songs. This is one of them. It was recorded way back in 1930. It's quite a famous recording. It's called Spring. It's typical Dougie Bing at the height of his powers, and there's nobody really like him. So to finish off this month's selection of my 78s, here is Douglas Bing, Dougie Bing as he was known, way back in 1930, singing Spring.
Must I think you better? You know, I haven't sung since my husband died. Oh, very well. I've seen one of those songs I love so much. Come out! Come out and shout about, for please is here. The daffodil and little wind are everywhere. The servant girls in wool furs are screaming their tops. Old Windsor Park just full of larks, and Eden's full of spots. Spring, spring, laughing spring, laughing, shouting, laughing spring. Let the merry bell he'll ring, let the ring. Fun and frolic fill the air, happy children everywhere. While they play at love of wing, no one knows quite what they're doing. All full of fun and caviar, a jolly windy spring is here. Come out, come out, don't flop about. There's work, my dear, for you. For all the earth is giving birth, God knows what we're to do. The centipedes and centipedes are bursting with delight. The birds are busy in the park. The cows stay out all night. Spring, spring, busy spring, busy, busy, busy spring. Charlie, the sun shattering over Chip and Dale. Flora with a dentist fair, broom and bluebell everywhere. In the boudoir, Auntie Nellie's dusting down her Botticelli. Nature peeps out all bright and clear. Rosy cheeky spring. Fruity salty spring. Run away, you can't delay, forever vesting free.
Dougie Douglas Bing, which brings to a close the 78 RPM section of my show. And this is the time when I moan at you and say, come on, there ought to be more people listening to my podcast than there are. This program should be out there and being listened to by thousands of people because the 78s are fantastic. Also, just remind any of you who have started to collect 78s, particularly those of you who like the operatic part of my program, I do still have 200 or 300 doubles which I'd like to sell so that they have a really good, well-appreciated home. Contact me, if you would, at spats47@ntlworld.com or if you are on my website, which is earloakin.net, just go to the section which allows you to contact me and leave me a message there. I'll send you the link and you can look through the records and maybe have them for your very own to play on your own turntable. Hopefully a modern electrical one, because putting needles and using an old-fashioned one will soon wear them out, which we do not wish to have, do we? Anyway, be that as it may, I've got quite a long section left if I'm to have this the normal length of my show, so I thought I'd impose upon you another one of the movements of my recently written symphony. This is performed, if you will, by my computer, so I'm really quite modern, even though I've got 78s. And this one is the fourth movement, in fact, the first movement that I wrote. It's quite long, so I hope that you'll enjoy it. It's quite melodic. It's a sort of a waltz. And with that, I say au revoir till the next time, which will be December, and I'll have to put together another selection of recordings which are suitable for winter and Christmas. Until then, however, as always, I wish you a fond au revoir.